This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
A Factual Data Creation Facility production. From the Factual Data Creation Facility Studio South, it's episode 222 of the OFNT podcast, which I'm calling From the Kitchen. Excuse the audio quality, please. As the episode title infers, I'm recording this from the kitchen of my new and pretty much empty house, which has that great echo effect everybody knows and loves.
No!
And there's nothing I could do about it. I don't have access to all of my post-processing tools to negate this and other environmental effects. Well, enough about that. Let's get this show on the road, what do you say?
Yeah.
Relocating updates. Yeah, I've added a new temporary category. I figured I might as well, since so much is going on now concerning my move. As foretold, my lovely wife and I departed New York around 5 in the morning last Sunday, and traffic was light. We stopped a few times for gas and made it to the new place around 6 in the evening. We quickly unloaded our vehicle and headed to Walmart, which has become our go-to shopping place on this trip. Well, at least for basic stuff. Unfortunately, old Wally World didn't have the futon mats in stock we thought they would have, so we were stuck sleeping on the floor of our house for the time being. Plan B was to order the futon mats from Amazon, being that I'm a Prime member, and we'd have them in 2 days max. Right?
Wrong.
Well, Amazon estimated it would take 4 days for the items to arrive.
What?
And that seems to be the standard for this area. So this delivery situation has me rethinking my Prime membership. Plan C was to order them from Walmart, which we wound up doing. Walmart estimated 2 days for the items to arrive. Oh, and speaking of arriving, my son arrived early the next morning. As far as my Walmart order, everything was going good. I tracked a shipment, which was via FedEx, as the futons made their way from Kentucky to Tennessee in a day. It was a good thing, too. My back and hips were being killed from sleeping on the floor, despite the soft carpet we were laying on. On the expected delivery day, I saw that the items were on a truck and ready for delivery. Well, time passed, and by that evening, I got a text from Walmart which said, "Sorry, your order has been delayed." By this time, we had spent 2 days sleeping on the floor, and I couldn't take much more. The next day, the status of my shipment remained the same, but now said delivery expected by the end of the day. And end of the day it was when it showed up. That was about 6 in the evening. My back and hips are in recovery now. The internet guy came on Tuesday morning, and within an hour, we had 1 gig speed of fiber-delivered internet service, which is working great. Later on Tuesday, the washer and dryer we spent too much money on arrived and were hooked up. Wednesday, we went furniture shopping, and I spent a mind-blowing amount of money, and we haven't even finished furniture shopping yet. My bank account is still in shock for what we spent for bedroom, living room, and kitchen setups. Of course, almost everything we ordered wasn't in stock, so as of now, only the living room couch has been delivered. When the other stuff comes in, they'll set up a delivery window. The security system guy has been blowing us off. Because of our lack of internet at the time, he was unable to finish installing the cameras, which remained charging on the floor of my front room. A quick email to the company he works for resolved that situation, and the cameras were installed on Friday. We'll be heading back to New York early in the morning on Thursday, and I'm sure I'll be exhausted from the trip, as usual. I can't wait until I'm able to finish settling into my new place and finally call it home. Tech news. As scheduled, Apple held its annual Worldwide Developers Conference, better known as WWDC, or WWDC if you're in with the Apple Tech Press kids, last Monday. At the time, I didn't have internet service, so I attempted to watch it on my iPhone 15 Pro Max, the big one. The attempt was a failure, besides being constantly distracted by the going-ons around me. I just couldn't enjoy watching on such a small screen. I did manage to watch a bit of it on the Apple's YouTube channel later, but found myself dozing off. I then did the next best thing when my internet service was squared away. I watched a variety of recaps of the event. I'll just run down what I feel are the most significant things announced at the event that'll apply to the common user. That means you and I. First off, this year's WWDC was actually what it was supposed to be, all about software. There were no hardware announcements to be had at the event. The start of the pre-recorded announcements commenced with various members of the giant fruit company's upper management parachuting into the Apple headquarters, which of course was mostly, if not totally, staged. Old bow-legged Tim Cook then appears and, as usual, kicks off the event by bragging about Apple products. But this time, it was mostly about Apple TV Plus, the company's streaming service. After that, Vision OS 2 was announced. And of course, that's for the Vision Pro headset, in case you've forgotten that it exists, like I often do. Basically, Apple has improved the photo app on it and other small things that only the small number of users of that overpriced headset would care about. After Vision OS 2, the star of the show, iOS 18, took center stage, and Apple informed us that AI doesn't stand for artificial intelligence. No, AI actually refers to Apple intelligence. Well, okay then. A slew of AI features are then unleashed upon us, mostly concerning emojis. You know, like new ways to create custom emojis and the like. I'm sure these things will be a hit with the young and old cool kids out there, but for old farts such as myself, well, not so much. You can now further customize your home screen in ways that Android users could already do years ago. It's hard for me to get excited about things like this, so pardon my drollness. A useful feature announced next was the ability to lock down individual apps so they would require Face ID or a passcode in order to open. Then various iMessage features that I'll most likely never use were introduced. Siri was up next. You can now interact with Siri using gestures like nodding yes or no. I guess this could be handy. AirPods Pro gets a new voice isolation mode that will help you communicate while using them in windy and other non-ideal situations. Boy, the old AirPod Pros keep receiving useful updates despite their shelf life about to expire. New models of the AirPod Pros are expected this fall. Watch OS 11 got some health and fitness updates that will help those into this stuff. SharePlay and Freeform got a couple of new features, and I don't know anybody that actually uses Freeform, do you? iPad OS 11 gives the iPad something it never had before, a calculator. I don't know why it took so long to bring a calculator to the iPad, but at least this calculator is much more powerful than the iPhone's version. You can even write complex math equations using the Apple Pencil on your iPad screen, and iPad OS will figure out the answer for you. I'm sure this feature is powered by Apple intelligence. Next up was Mac OS Sequoia. Basically, many iOS exclusive features are coming over to the Mac operating system. One new feature, iPhone mirroring, lets you run a virtual iPhone on your Mac screen. Useful, but again, something you could do with an Android phone and Chrome OS for a while now. This will help out software developers mainly. Apple intelligence then took center stage. The features introduced, while beneficial, would have been labeled machine learning previously, not any sort of intelligence. Siri then had another turn on stage. The old forlorn digital assistant is more integrated into the different operating systems than ever before. Instead of the old circle of lights indicator, the borders of your device's screen will light up in blue to indicate Siri is engaged. The old gal has gotten the ability to converse with you more naturally, will better understand you even if you mispronounce or slur your words. Drunks attempting to call an Uber rejoice. Apple then announced ChatGPT is coming to Apple devices via Siri. The partnership with Apple didn't cost old Tim Cook and company any money either. ChatGPT did it just for the exposure to the millions of Apple users around the world. Quite a coup for Apple, methinks. This also may explain why Google's Gemini didn't make an appearance, despite the rumors that Apple was in negotiations to use its technology. The big G probably wanted some cold, hard cash. That, and the fact that Gemini seems to be a dumpster fire, helped drive Apple into OpenAI's arms. The biggest things announced, at least for me, are Rich Communication Services, also known as RCS, is finally coming to iOS and iMessage. And text communications via satellite, if you're what they call off the grid. The minimum standard of RCS is what iDevices are getting, but this will allow for message receipt and typing indicators and full support for videos and photos outside of iMessage. iMessage and text messages by satellite is exactly what it says. If you are not in an area with cellular coverage, you can text an iMessage via satellite as if you did have coverage, and not just in emergency situations as previously required. The good news is that this will be free of charge, at least for now. Unfortunately, RCS will be unable to take advantage of this satellite messaging feature. The reason given is that there is no one standard for RCS. When an RCS standard is agreed to and implemented, Apple says it will add it to its satellite service. All in all, Apple's version of AI is not groundbreaking or even that evident. It just enhances your experiences using Apple devices, and in a way you probably wouldn't notice. In my opinion, this is how it should be. If you want access to the features of ChatGPT, like image generation and stuff, well, you can have it. If you're like me, you couldn't be bothered with those things. Well, you can choose to just ignore it. The big controversy from the WWDC is all these features of Apple Intelligence required an iPhone 15 Pro and later.
What?
If you opted for just a basic iPhone 15 or 15 Max, well, you're out of luck. I guess this will prompt a massive upgrade cycle this coming September. Or will it? If consumers are as big into AI or Apple Intelligence as much as the tech press says they are, then it will be a huge upgrade year. My feeling is that consumers are just not that into it. I think Apple will have an uptick in iPhone sales this year, but nothing earth-shattering. Time will tell. The good news for Mac and iPad users is all these so-called wonderful Apple Intelligence features only require an Apple Silicon chip, the old M1 chip included. While I'm not overly excited about this latest iteration of iOS, iPad OS, or Mac OS, that doesn't mean I won't find some of these new features useful. They're all pretty much low-key, which I think was the intent here. No hoopla or outrageous claims. It's AI the Apple way, which just might be the correct way of going about it. The one other thing this year's WWDC accomplished was to suck the life out of the tech news and thus my newsfeed this week. There were a few other news items, but nothing major. So because I'm busy with other things, I'll just end the tech news section here. Tech I'm using. When the internet installation technician showed up at this new place, well, for me, it was like Santa showing up on Christmas Eve. The whole process took about 45 minutes and would have been even faster, but of course, there was a slight problem with the router, which wouldn't come online. Turns out that it was installing updates. The tech told me that this should have been done prior to the installation, but somehow his batch of routers weren't done, sighing that he had a long day ahead of him. Also, while the homes in this development are pre-configured for Xfinity cable service, the builders wouldn't allow the local power company, which is the fiber provider, to do the same. We both agreed that this was most likely due to money, which, as you know, talks, while the rest walk. Xfinity probably paid the builders a tidy sum in order to enable them to become the de facto preferred internet provider for the development. The router had to be located in our master bedroom because that's where the wiring for the fiber is located. Not the optimum placing for it, but there was no choice. If the fiber provider was allowed to pre-install during construction, there would have been a control box mounted within one of the closets near the sweet spot of the house. I worried about the strength of the internet signal upstairs, but the technician took a reading for us. My son's room is getting 400 down and about 370 up, while my future recording space, which is located directly above the router's location, is getting 450 up and about the same down. That blows away the 200-something down and 50 up we get in New York, and at half the price. Eventually, I'll most likely put a mesh system in, or at least an extender for upstairs. I'll be keeping my eye on Wi-Fi 7 mesh systems prices and pull the trigger when they fall low enough for my budget. There's no sense using my current TP-Link mesh system because it's an older model and can't handle the speeds of the fiber connection. Downstairs, I'm getting over 900 down and up, and I'm enjoying watching apps downloading faster than I've ever experienced before. Streaming is much smoother also. No interruptions from the dreaded spinning wheel of buffering or any audio lag. In fact, three of my neighbors have switched from Xfinity to fiber after I had mine installed. They had to pay a fee for breaking the contract with Xfinity. Well, I'm all set for internet providers unless Google Fiber comes to town. The big G speeds and prices are a lot better than what I have now, but hey, I'm not complaining. Our newly purchased washer and dryer wants us to download an app for them and connect to Wi-Fi.
What?
Yeah, that's not happening. You know, I'm getting tired of everyday appliances wanting apps and an internet connection. Why do the manufacturers of these mundane appliances want to complicate things? Next thing you know, they'll be infusing these products with AI. If they haven't already. I say, enough of this. Apple just dropped a nice update for its Mac OS versions of the company's productivity suite of apps. The only one of those that I really use is the word processor Pages. The update brings the Mac OS version up to par with the iOS version. The most noticeable feature is the inline predictions of words and phrases, something the iOS version of Pages has had since I can remember, as well as competing apps like Word, for example. It appears all of the Mac OS productivity apps like Numbers and Keynotes got this ability with the update. Perhaps Apple is finally taking its suite of productivity apps seriously. What they really need to do is turn some attention towards the stock email app. It's kind of a mess. Anyway, that's the good thing about a Mac. It's ready to go right out of the box with no need to download any core apps. Apple used to charge extra for its productivity suite when it was called iWork. Back in what a lot of people have gotten used to calling the day.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Entertainment news. Amazon's Prime Video Services original series The Boys is back for season 4, which I believe may be its last. While the show always sort of virtue signaled in previous seasons, it seems The Boys has gone all in on this season, and I've only watched the first episode. If you don't know, the premise of The Boys is about a bunch of superheroes who are not at all good people, with some being downright bad characters, and a group of normies trying to bring them down. One of the so-called good superheroes is played by a formerly cute actress named Erin Moriarty. I say formerly cute because between seasons 3 and 4, she's had what they call work done, and she's now almost unrecognizable. I had heard about this transformation months ago, but was startled when I actually saw it for myself the first time on the TV show. If I were her, I'd be awfully upset with my plastic surgeon. She went from being the classic cute girl next door type to some Kardashian-like plastic-looking woman. She looks much older than she did previously also, and her nose no longer appears to belong on her face. What a shame. I wish women would stop doing this to themselves. Like us normal people, these actresses and actors should learn to play the hand that God has dealt them. As far as the show itself, besides the woke message stuff, it seems pretty good. At least judging from the first episode. Hopefully this will continue for the rest of the episodes in the season. Podcast news. Nothing here except the usual mergers, layoffs, and fun cutting within the podcasting incorporated world. Bloomberg.com has an article on their website which reads, "Podcast producers make do with less after budgets are sliced in half," unquote. In the article, the author laments that during the height of the not-so-long-ago podcasting incorporated heyday, Production of narrative-type shows would easily command a budget of up to $500,000.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of piastres, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
These producers teamed up with reporters and searched out and collected big story ideas and shot them around to the many bidders out there who were just itching to get into the podcast game. This came at a great time for legacy media, especially newspapers and magazines, whose readerships were and unfortunately are still declining. But after the podcasting bubble burst, which happened after the COVID lockdowns ended, these big deals have all but disappeared. If you are lucky enough to find a willing investor, the budget for these types of shows average about $150,000 these days, and once landing a deal, it takes months before it's even greenlit. These podcast producers are forced to reduce the number of people working on the shows and produce less episodes of them. Of course, layoffs have ensued and mergers have become commonplace. The upside is that the producers now have the ability to fund these podcasts themselves with no barriers.
Yes?
But will they?
No.
Probably not. If these legacy media entities, especially news-based ones, would just practice good old journalism and present the facts of the story instead of the narrative and agenda-driven journalism most of them use today, perhaps they wouldn't be in the dire straits they find themselves in currently. When the same sort of things hit the radio industry, many of those laid off started their own podcasts with very small budgets and were successful at it. Usually, it was just the formerly on-air talent teaming up with their old, laid-off sound engineers. A couple of years ago, I recall reading the show notes for a podcast which featured a host talking about a subject I can't even remember. Yeah, it was that forgettable. The show notes listed 12 people who helped produce this show. This included multiple writers, editors, researchers, fact-checkers, and more. All to produce an audio-only show that didn't have over a couple of thousand listeners per episode. I remember being amazed by this at the time. In comparison, Joe Rogan employs only one other person, who serves as sound engineer, editor, and jack-of-all non-show hosting trades. And Rogan gets millions of listeners per episode. It just goes to show you that a podcast can be produced on a limited budget after the initial investment in equipment and software. To sum up, while I do have sympathy for those affected by layoffs, there are still opportunities in podcasting. That is, if you're willing to invest in yourself and earn a little bit less money. This episode was produced using an older setup of mine and shows that you can crank out content without spending thousands of dollars on equipment. The microphone I'm using with shock mount and stand cost me about $260. The audio interface sent me back about $150. And the channel strip plus cables cost about the same. And this was my highfalutin setup before my upgrade to what I use up in New York. Before that, my complete setup was under $500. Now, I know the sound isn't great, but if I wasn't recording in a large empty space, well, you probably wouldn't even hear a difference from the other episodes recorded in a much more suitable and quiet space. The music is playing, marking the end of the very first episode of the OFNT podcast to be recorded from my new place, albeit not in the best sounding room. Don't worry, that'll come in time. Oh, before I forget, happy Father's Day to all you fellow dads. To those who aren't yet fathers, keep having fun trying. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed making it for you. If you like what you heard, you can make a donation using the link in the show notes. Any and all donations will be greatly appreciated. You can always reach me at ofntpodcast@gmail.com, and as if you're so inclined, I'd enjoy hearing from you. Remember, don't listen to what they say, watch what they do. You know, my new yard isn't even half the size of the old one, and there's no room for all of you. So don't be milling around here. Get off my lawn. Stay skeptical. I'm out.
See ya.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.